For more information on audio dramatizations, please visit www.tribeworld.com. Keep the dream alive.
Code 1, civil priority. Isolation now in effect. To avoid the risk of contamination, please stay indoors and await further instructions.
Well, hello, Tribe World. It's Ray here. I hope you're all doing well. It's been a while since our last podcast. I've been busy working on the Tribe game, which has been in development, and also our audiobooks. So I hope you're enjoying those. And I'm very pleased and delighted to come back to our podcast, and especially because we have got a tremendously talented young man who is best known and loved by all of you in Tribe World who played the iconic Top Hat. And so join me in welcoming the tremendous Sam Hassan. Good morning, Sam. How are you?
Good morning, Ray. Very well, thank you.
That's good. You're over in Auckland, and I'm still in Australia. So for our listeners in the Northern Hemisphere, we're in winter down here, and it's not too bad in Auckland, the weather, Sam. The winters, are they, really?
The winters in Auckland are quite tame, actually. But it gets very wet, I think. It's a very narrow city between both the eastern and west coast, so being so it has these massive bodies of water each side, and it can change very quickly. Like right now I'm looking out this relatively blue sky on one side of the house. If I look to the other side of the house, it looks like rain. So we are expecting a lot of rain today.
And Sam, you're originally English, eh? You were born and raised in England.
Yeah, born and raised in England, in Aylesbury, and then moved here with Dad to assist you with Cloud9, actually. That was the motivator. Dad was like, would you like to come and work for me in New Zealand? And I accepted, and then the sort of family moved over as well, and now we're split between the UK and New Zealand.
That's right. A lot of the listeners might be of interest to know that Sam's dad, a very close friend of mine and a tremendous talented man who contributed such a great deal to all of our Cloud9 shows, including The Tribe, was Jeff Hassan. Is Jeff Hassan, our executive in charge of production. And so how was it moving from England to how old were you, Seth?
I was 17, and I remember at school when I learned that Dad wanted to move to New Zealand. I was like, oh, New Zealand, where's that? Is that somewhere near Cornwall, which is in the south of England? And I remember going to my geography teacher at the time, because I was in secondary school, in my last year of secondary school, and the geography teacher pulled out this massive map, and I remember him unfolding it on the desk, and he said, we're here. And he pointed at the UK, and then he drew his finger all the way across the map to this island in the middle of the Pacific, what appeared to be all by itself, and said, and that's New Zealand. And I was like, oh, okay, it's a bit further than Cornwall then.
Yeah, that's right. That's a long flight, isn't it?
It was huge.
Yes, and so that was quite a cultural, you know, did you take to New Zealand when you, did you enjoy it, or did you struggle to get settled in?
I think it was a bit of bittersweet, because I think I'd moved away from my friends and my school, but seeing New Zealand upon arrival, we landed in Wellington, Auckland at night time, and then flew to Wellington where we were living at the time. And I remember as the sun was coming up and we were looking out the window of the Boeing that we were flying on, it was nothing like I'd ever seen before. It was just beautiful, the massive hills on one side, mountains coming into Wellington, and this little city coming up over the horizon, sort of thing. So I fell in love with New Zealand very quickly.
Oh, and that was how many years ago is that now? That's what, 1994, 5?
96, I think, was the year. Yeah, so 23-24 years ago.
Wow. And have you been back to England?
Yes, luckily I have twice. We went back to visit family in the year 2000, and my wife and I went to, my lovely wife Andrea and I went to visit her parents in Germany, and then we took a flight to Gatwick and then visited our family in London a couple of years ago, and it was awesome being back home for a bit. But lots of things have changed, obviously, and but I got to see parts of England with with sort of like my tourist eyes as opposed to living there. Yeah. And it was really lovely. We saw Land's End. We went down to Portsmouth, Cardiff, and visited family in the Isle of Wight. It was absolutely stunning and great to see it again.
And you've still got some of the family have moved back. I know, again, for our listeners, a lot of Sam's brother, Chris, worked on our show, a talented one of our first and second ADs, and your brother Kia was in post-production and worked with me on the music, and so some have gone back to England. Would you go back, Sam, or are you rooted into New Zealand now? You're a Kiwi.
Oh, I've often had this fantasy where I thought I'd reinvent myself in Berlin and learn German and work in a cafe and then use it to sort of travel around Europe and visit England and stuff. But yeah, I mean, definitely not close to the idea of a visit back to the UK. Probably not to live, though. I think my adulthood roots are now firmly planted in New Zealand now.
Well, I mean, as I often used to tell myself when I almost commuted between England and New Zealand when we were in production. And it's interesting, that flight the first time just seemed to go on forever. I thought, oh my God, like, when is this plane ever going to arrive, you know? But after a while, it was just like getting on a bus, Sam. You know, it's a small world, really. So you're only 24 hours away, you know? And it's quite extraordinary. And Sam, you mentioned, we chatted before we started recording about you've been married now for 2 years, is that correct?
Yes. We got married in New Zealand at a beautiful beach north of Auckland in Waiwera, which was just stunning, to my lovely wife, Andrea. She's a data scientist and actuary, working very hard, and we're quite focused on our careers right now. It's very much a different pace of life to performance and acting. Okay. But that sort of side of my life, I've never think on it very regularly is how I might approach Top Hat again if I had the opportunity, or if I would to dial the clock back, how I might approach the character differently. And I often ruminate and think about what I would have done with the character had I had the sort of the skills and the ability I do now. And that's always been quite entertaining to think about.
Had that. You wanted to be an actor? Had you? I mean, your family are very creative, and that's in the genes, no doubt. But I mean, growing up, were you into music or acting or performance arts? I mean, or was it just something that an opportunity presented and you thought, hey, I'll give this a shot? I mean, it's something you always wanted to do?
I think so. Well, yes, I was lucky enough to have a very supportive dad who was Jeff, who was always working on television and shows like Coronation Street and Emmerdale Farm, and producing TVCs for ITV and the BBC and such. So I wasn't ever too far from it. And I remember from a very early age, I think that's probably one of my earliest memories, maybe 7 years old, Dad was putting me on, saying, do you want to be an actor? Do you think you can cry on the spot, smile on the spot, laugh on the spot? And I was able to do so quite effortlessly, really, to his surprise, I think, at the time. And then from there, I kind of got exposed to extra work and what it's like actually being on a set with cameras and people who are, you know, fettling around you and cameras and so on. So I got used to the camera and the idea of the set at a very early age, and I fell in love with the craft. And when we moved to, and I tried to pick up theatre through school, I studied drama, and when we moved to New Zealand, obviously working for a film production company just seemed to be the best thing. It was like a Christmas come true, really. They got to work on a massive crew at the time, the biggest thing I'd ever seen, you know, 50, 60 crew members working on Enid Blyton. That was a wonderful show you produced in Wellington. And from there, I was like, no, this is definitely what I want to do. And Dad helped me, and we found it was a local performing arts school. At the time, it was called Wellington Performing Arts. And I completed a 2-year diploma at that to sort of batten down the skills, build skills, put them in the toolbox. And from there, I kind of then started delving into commercial, a little bit of radio, and then some television, thanks to your wonderful self as well, which was a great experience. And unfortunately, I as I grew older, I realized in New Zealand, it's a very competitive and quite a small market unless you're producing your own stuff. And it's quite a tough way to survive, and having aspirations and and wanting to sort of achieve a little bit more, it was hard to make a consistent living out of it. And so I sort of started working and then acting, and then working kind of took over. And then slowly but surely, I was like, getting more, being exposed to better roles and developing in my IT career. So things sort of took off that way, and I kind of left acting a little bit by the wayside.
And what do you do now, Sam? Do you mind getting into that? This is going to be fascinating. Oh, into IT, aren't you?
Yes, that's right. So I work for the iconic Air New Zealand, which is a carrier that connects people around the world, which is incredibly empowering when you think about what we actually do. We lift people off the ground and take them to meet with their families and friends or work or so forth, and it's quite empowering. I work in the digital department for the airline and producing and looking after services for our end user computer, end user experience area. So that's, well, I like to think of it as if you pick up the building and turn it upside down and give it a good shake, everything that falls out is kind of under my remit. Everything that then stays in the building is someone else's job. But it's a IT service delivery role.
It would have been quite amazing with COVID and all the disruption to the airline travel. And has that been a cause of concern or difficulties?
Yes, absolutely. I think everyone felt the impact of COVID-19, especially the airline, because international and local travel halted completely for months. I actually onboarded on the 1st of April last year. So I started with the airline last year during lockdown. So all my interviews, my engagements and my meetings with people was completely over Zoom or Teams or Skype. And it was very unusual for about 6 months. So my first set foot in the office was the first. I built very strong relationships with these teams and these people, but never actually met them in real life. So it was quite a challenge.
As it's been. And Sam, New Zealand, thankfully, is almost normal now with COVID, isn't it? Really, life is normal. How did you cope with lockdown?
We were very lucky in New Zealand to have a very, very strong and forward-thinking leadership and government at the time. Jacinda made a very strong stance against COVID and took the country into lockdown quite early on. And we were able to crush influenza and COVID relatively quickly with no, and today, thankfully, no community transmission, only 4 cases in managed isolation, I believe, from India, I believe. Yeah. Don't quote me on that. I think is that from in terms of coping, it was I think quite easy for my wife and I. We had a flatmate from with us at that time from Brazil, and I think seeing the connection with her and her family and the struggles they were going through brought it home to us as that. We had it. We were very, very lucky. And we coped by essentially we bought a gym, we put it in downstairs, we created a bubble with our neighbor and her beautiful children. She has 4 children under 10 years old, and we were all training and gymming in the morning and sort of had a little extensive bubble. So we were quite lucky in that respect. So yeah, did a lot of exercise, lost a lot of weight, came out of lockdown. Now I've put on a lot of weight and I'm exercising less.
It's incredible. And around the world, I hope all you and Tribe World is safe and well with ASAM. So we're very fortunate down, as you say, in New Zealand, and likewise in Australia, really. Some of the, I see Victoria's got some problems there. They're in lockdown again. But, you know, it looks like England and America and some of the other countries are coming through it. It's a shame in India, as you say. It's just tragic, really. But, philosophically, has that changed your outlook on life at all, Sam?
I don't think so. When I think on the countries and the people who are struggling the most, of course, I empathize greatly with how challenging that must be. A friend of mine whose father passed during COVID sort of brought it home as to the reality of it's not just all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed for people out there. There's a lot of people struggling financially, businesses are struggling, and communities are suffering immensely, especially within the lower socioeconomic communities that we see around, and my heart goes out to these people who are going through that, and it makes me feel quite grateful for where we are and what we're doing. I think has it changed my outlook on life? I think I've become slightly humbler, and maybe a little bit more cognizant of what other people might be going through, and to be grateful that when I get an opportunity to go out with my dad to have coffee, I have to be really grateful for that time and that moment to moment we spend together, because it's quite special. And I think people are always on their phones nowadays and always consumed in this digital technology, and we sort of have lost a little bit of that personal connection with people and other places that might not be doing so well. So I think, yeah, it's helped me kind of broaden my awareness a little bit.
Yeah, it's like a pause button, isn't it, really, where you can kind of reflect, where have we come from, where are we now, where are we going, and how do we live our lives? And I mean, it's self-regulating, really, where you do realize in this fast-paced material world, it's so fast and instant, and at least now you have that time to reflect and enjoy, as you say, the moments, time spent with your loved ones, with your dad, time spent reflecting, time spent on your own, really. I mean, when you're imprisoned, really, incarcerated with lockdown and not able to travel or hop on a plane or other things that we take for granted, even going on holidays or out for a meal, or it's quite extraordinary that. And Sam, Andre, so she's German, is she?
Yes, from Germany. She's her parents are in Usedom, which is the northern part of Germany, and we get to hang out with them every couple of years, obviously not the last couple of years with everything that's been going on. And she moved to New Zealand, I think, about 9-8 years ago, thereabouts.
Because the tribe, of course, is very, very big in Germany, and we've got a very loyal and committed fan base in Germany. And had she ever seen the tribe when she was in Germany on Kinderkanal?
She hasn't. Instead, she gets friends of mine who know I've been in the tribe sending her YouTube links and say, did you realize this is your husband playing this guy dressed up in spandex with a silver codpiece wearing a top hat who's potentially trying to savage and disrupt children in a mall? And she's just like, I do not understand this. This is very unusual. Why would Sam do this? No, it's a character. Don't worry. Just watch the video.
And where did you both meet?
we met in we both are avid motorcyclists. I'm a huge motorcycle fan. I love to race motorbikes. Been competing a little bit and exploring that over the last couple of years, but we met essentially on the track. You know, we met when she was riding her Ninja, and she was basically new to the sport and stuff, and I was, you know, a track advocate, and we had a mutual friend, and we met through him.
Well, was it love at first sight?
It was she was incredible. I remember yes and no. She was very intimidating when I first met her, because she's an actuary and very smart, young, capable woman, very tall, beautiful, long blonde hair, has an opinion about stuff, and is quite strong-willed. And of course that was quite intimidating at the beginning, but no, I quickly grew to love her incredibly deeply, and then we started dating and going out, and became kind of part of each other's lives very quickly. We moved in not a few months after we met, and then it just grew and grew. And I was like, you know what, I'd love to, you know, marry you. What would you think? And she said, well, we don't need marriage to sanction this in any sense of the word. We would happily do it, but it would be a great opportunity to have an amazing day with our friends. Let's do it.
Probably. Yeah. And you've been married, what, 2 years, you said?
2 years, yes.
Well, that's great. And Sam, that's interesting about your motorcycle passions. What kind of motorbike do you have?
We've got a few in the garage at the moment. You've got a commuter bike, which is just for that single purpose tool that gets us to work and back. Andrea has a CBR 600. I've got a SV 650 Suzuki, which is a dedicated track bike set up for racing. So we compete in the Pro Twin class at race meetings in both Auckland, Hamilton, and Wellington, Palmerston North. And tried to have a shot at the New Zealand Superbike at Motorfest this year. Unfortunately, COVID swept in, and unfortunately the event was cancelled. But next year is hopeful for the New Zealand Superbike.
It's fascinating that I hadn't realised that actually. That and what do you enjoy about it?
I think it's the element of pushing your boundaries in a way that you intuitively know is incredibly dangerous, but that when you're on the bike, the only thing you think about is the freedom of the road and the ability to turn and just and go fast. It's both exhilarating and exciting to be right on the edge of existence, if you will. Yeah. Like knowing that at any one point in time, if this was to go badly, it might be that's it sort of thing. I think there's a certain carnal attraction to being right on the edge of something and connected it. And the funny thing is that you're blasting around this corner at 70, 80 miles an hour, and there's a guy right there by your shoulder doing it with you. Like your handlebars are millimeters apart in some states, and that's exhilarating. You don't get that kind of excitement and exhilaration from working in an office. So it's kind of a creative and also an outlet, yeah, I think.
Nice. Amazing. No, I love motorbikes as well. And it's interesting when, back in the day, Triumph Bonneville was my favorite motorbike. But when I was about 15, 16, sadly, I had a friend who was killed on a motorbike accident. So my mother persuaded me never to ride one. I never have, I've always loved them, particularly after seeing Easy Rider as well. There's that romantic, I'd love to travel Route 66 on by a Harley. I'd love that. That would be.
Oh, yeah.
My fantasy.
Well, maybe not on a Harley for me, but. Definitely something that's a bit more comfy and a cruiser. Was it? Did you ride the Bonneville T100? Because I love those bikes.
Oh, they're fantastic. Yeah, I love the sound. I love the whole. I mean, it's quite extraordinary that. And Sam, you mentioned when we were talking about eventually you'd love to have children, but so far, no children. But you do have a horse and did you say a cat and a dog? Is it or?
Unfortunately, we have a wonderful horse, Donny. He's a 17-2 warm blood cross, and he's amazing. He's a big boy. He's like 17-2 and probably close to 800 kilos. And he's as soppy as a, but he's very spookish. He's quite young. He's only 4 years old, so he does spook relatively easily. But very exciting, very smoochy chap. And our dog Moby, who's a Hunterway cross. So yeah, we picked him up
from the SPCA
special. He's 8 years old, going on 2.
Oh, that's lovely. It's just, and what about the horse? I mean, so you Andrea rides as well? Does she ride horses, or is it just you?
She's and back in Germany, Andrea was a dressage rider, and she was doing that professionally for a while. And it was always her dream to get back into it. So, I've been recently learning how to ride too, because I love that connection with the animal. But also, it'd be quite handy. And if some extras work came up and they needed people who could ride horses, I was like, oh, that would actually be quite a fun day, day on set on horseback, sort of thing. So I've been learning how to ride as well while she sort of. Picking up the skills and getting back into it.
That's great. And Sam, I've got a lot of questions from our fans. We got them on, from YouTube to our Facebook pages and Twitter, and also a lot of messages have come in. So if you don't mind, I'll not hog you for myself as much as I
do. That's fine.
I'd love to have a chat for all day, because I find it quite fascinating. It's lovely to catch up, and because I've known you since you were a young lad, a teenager, and so Sam, I've got a question from Alan, Alan Simpson, who's sent a message and who wants to get into acting and wants to know if you've got any tips on that. I mean, any tips that you can give a young aspiring actor?
Oh, absolutely. Hey, Alan, thank you for listening in today. I can sort of help you by, I guess, giving you a story of my own, which might sort of help you sort of think your way through this, because no one can really tell you what's best for you to get into acting. It's really got to come down to what you feel is best for you. I mean, I have an idea of what might be best, but again, you're the pioneer of your destiny in that regard. I think with acting, I used it as an opportunity to learn a lot more about myself. It was an exploration of the self. And I think if you're brave enough to dig into who you are, like really who you are and how you behave and how psychology kind of works and things like that, then I think absolutely go nuts. Read as much as you can. Don't just look at a movie. Look at the credits. Who made it? Who directed it? What are their influences? What have they read and stuff? And by and large, you'll start broadening your knowledge about it. And then, you know, perhaps look at some of the schools locally. Is there any performing arts centers that are doing small performances or plays around that you can get engaged with? Absolutely. Go through the community, see what's happening in the community and get involved. Just get out there and do it, Alan.
Well, that's good advice, Sam. And Sam, you I don't know if it was you said you did some extra work at Cloud9 on our shows, but I recall your very first, I mean, performance, a lot of the listeners might be intrigued to know, in Adventures of Swiss Family Robinson, you played the part of a gorilla, right?
Yes. Oh, I'd forgotten about that until you mentioned it. Oh, yes.
And that was quite a, because we actually had an animatronic gorilla costume that was very realistic, I have to say. And I used to give my young kids who were young at that time nightmares when it's so realistic. But you that was an amazingly difficult thing. I mean, how was that? It would have been very warm to be in that costume all day, no doubt, and to be crouching, and it was like some of the actors in Planet of the Apes, you know, I mean, to kind of, you did really, really well. It was very, very difficult. How did you find that?
I'm desperately trying to remember the name of the company we collaborated with in Australia to build it, and the name escapes me, Ray. Those guys were amazing. We had to do a full on body cast, and that was quite unusual because I was a relatively lean chap when I was 18, and I had to stand up straight and sit with my arms held parallel. And I don't know if you've ever tried to hold your arms out for an hour or so, 10 minutes even, it's actually quite a challenge. So they had to put this full body cast over me and then give me little sticks that they would attach to my thigh and into my elbow so I could keep my arms like a stick man, like a white scarecrow, as they built this bodysuit, right? And then they went through this process of building the animatronics and the suit around essentially my mold. And then we flew back to try the suit on and to get it all working and to do sort of the testing and so on and so forth. And it was actually quite challenging, that suit, because we were filming, it was in Kaitoki. No, it was in one of the regional parks in Wellington. I forget the name. And it was in the heat of summer. So it was like 26, 27 degrees in the heat of Wellington summer. I'm wearing a synthetic, a spandex internal suit. I'm wearing then a muscle suit to sort of distort my physiology to look more like a gorilla. You then have the gorilla fur suit over that with the boots, then the animatronic hands and stuff, which were kind of finger instrumental mechanics that operated the hands, and then this beautiful, amazing piece of technology is the face and the mask and the head, which had the animatronic mouth and the eyes and stuff. I had these massive black contact lenses and stuff, and once you're geared up on all that, it was certainly challenging. And then of course the scene, one of the scenes we had to do was me running across this riverbed, and it's literally boulders the size of a car and a little stream of water, you know, like a typical beautiful riverbed coming off the mountain. I had to run across this, turn around, run back into the bush and stuff. And of course the suit is so big and it's quite heavy and they've limited vision and stuff, and I'm trying to, you know, embody the gorilla as far as one might think that they can ever embody a gorilla, and I'm running across it. And I just remember doing the scene over and over and over again.
You did very, yeah, very well, I have to say. I mean, some of the listeners, you should, if you get a chance, try and check it out. It's, I think it's called Captive, the episode, but it was very difficult thing to, I was really most impressed when I watched that, Sam. I thought that was very, very difficult to portray. And of course, Andy Serkis in, King Kong, I think did, it was a forefront. I mean, we obviously being a smaller company with not the big budgets that we had for special effects. But I thought, all credit to yourself. You brought that to life very, very well indeed,
And thank you.
And then you worked on William Shatner with A Twist in the Tale in Bertie. Again, the listeners might be aware or unaware that Sam played the leading role, actually, in the episode Bertie and William Shatner's A Twist in the Tale. And did you enjoy that? You played the part of a ghost.
That was, that role in particular was something very close to my heart. And it was... Yeah, just a wonderful opportunity to work with the likes of Chris Arnold, who was directing that piece in particular. And just such a wonderful story. And I think as term as my acting career had gone, it was an opportunity to me. The funny thing is Chris was kind of encouraging me to fail. He was kind of encouraging me to underplay the character, not be too over the top because I was, young and energetic. And Bertie was very much a sort of very shy, kind of calm, cultivatedly cool chap who was put into this extraordinary situation and had to sort of cope with it. And the story was quite nice. And that's, it was probably one of my favorite roles I've had to play, other than Top Hat.
That's an interesting segue into another question from our YouTube channel from Breeder Rose. Hi, Breeder. Thanks for your question. What other films have you been in? Is Top Hat the best role you have had? If you weren't Top Hat, who would you have liked to have played?
Oh, what a great question, Breeda. What a fantastic question. Yeah. I was very fortunate to work with Ray, yourself, and my dad, being one of the leaders in television and film in that time. And I was exposed to some amazing talents. And I really wish I'd have pursued the academic side of my career and tried out for drama school, Toi Whakaari in Wellington and pursued that. But I think if I look at the roles I've played, I've really enjoyed playing supporting characters, I think, more than leads because there was less pressure and there was, less work involved in establishing, your background and your development for the character in that particular role. And I played this one character in another show and it was essentially a supporting role, and it was an opportunity to sort of be a little bit, I was basically like I was a kid with long hair that got taken into forest and eaten by a bunch of wolves. I was also the extra that then got stabbed by a massive hanging device that chopped down. I mean, I was like, oh, these roles are actually quite fun. These roles, you can come in and you can make a swift impression on the crew, on the producers, by doing something unique and quite funny in context. And I actually quite enjoyed that. So I kind of favored more moving into the supporting roles rather than those feature roles.
And Sam, where the tribe is concerned, was there any other character that you would have liked to play in the tribe?
Oh, I had a bit of a man crush on Daniel James's portrayal of Zoot. He was just such a mean character and played so well. I thought that would have been a great opportunity. But when I played Top Hat, I thought the Tribe Circus was a different theme, slightly cool as well. But I kind of had a bit of a man crush on Zoot.
And Sam, how did you feel when you got the part of Top Hat? I mean, what was it like coming onto the set in an established series with, you were obviously aware how popular the series was and how it had connected, and you came in, to be one of the so-called tribe villains, with the iconic Zoot and later obviously Ram and the Guardian what was your view of the role? I mean, had you seen Clockwork Orange, for example? I mean, or did you base your portrayal in any way?
That's right. It was definitely off Alex DeLarge's Malcolm McDowell's Stanley Kubrick film Clockwork Orange. That was definitely kind of where I was getting indications from as to how I wanted to portray top hat. And I remember when I auditioned for the role and feeling like at the end of the audition I could have, oh no, I could have, I don't know, I wanted to take it on more of a sort of I wanted to sort of mess with Top Hat's gender a little bit, like he was lying in between the transition, as you might say. And I think I remember the casting director at the time going, let's just play it straight, let's just keep Top Hat lead, let's keep him straight and narrow. That was kind of exciting because it was opportunity to play it and give it a different sort of spin, right? Because he was very kind of heterosexual, maybe, as you might describe him. When I left the audition, I thought, oh, well, that was a lot of fun. If I don't get it, that's fine. You know, I had a lot of fun and exposed a little bit of my talents to the powers that be, so we'll see. And then, of course, I remember getting a call from Libby, who is my agent at the time, and she said, you know what, you've managed to nail Top Hat. And I was
really did, I have to say. I mean, it leapt off the screen. I mean, it was terrific. There's a question from C, S-E-A, hello, C, that which actually segues into this, Sam. I said, I loved your performance as Top Hat. Have you ever seen a live circus performance yourself? And did you watch any for inspiration to get in characters? So you obviously, you looked at Clockwork Orange, but did you, what about circuses? Have you been to the live circus before, Sam?
I had, and we tried to find one before we started filming Top Hat to sort of connect again with the environment and to see what that was like. Unfortunately, there was nothing within Wellington around the time we were filming. And when I moved to Auckland, we were lucky enough to see Cirque du Soleil, and oh my God, I mean, it's just incredible. I think with a good friend of mine a few years ago, we were traveling into Whangarei, which is north of Auckland, way up north, and there was one of those pop-up circuses. And we managed to go in and see the athletes and the entertainers there. And it's just, yeah, it's something, there's something quite enchanting about a group of people who are setting themselves out in the world to essentially go and entertain people with some incredible athletic abilities. And yeah, I think, you know, had I been able to get to the circus to be able to maybe draw more from the circus into the theme of Top Hat would have been a wonderful thing to do.
Brilliant. I've got another question, Sam, from Manuela Wurz. Hi, Manuela. That's a familiar name. So, hi, Sam. Did you do the acrobatic jump over the banister back onto the stairs yourself, or was that done by a stuntman?
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, I did not. there was a stuntman who came in to do that for us. I did want to give it a go, but having no acrobatic training, unfortunately, yeah, probably not best to let your lead character try and do a flip and break his leg or something. You know?
Sam, I've got another one from, I think it's our YouTube, from Angelica Figura. I think that's how you pronounce it. Forgive me, Angelica, if I've mispronounced, but Top Hat seemed like another character that we didn't get enough time with. They were built up to be a deadly acrobatic tribe of death, and two episodes later, we never acknowledged them again. That, Sam, you know that we're doing a tribe game, and Top Hat is going to feature in that game, Top Hat's acknowledged himself, is a very iconic figure, and who knows what's going to happen in the future if we do sequels or ever get a movie away, or you know, but I know that I've been speaking with AJ Penn in our books, and we were going to interweave Top Hat without giving any spoilers. But I mean, why do you think it's connected, Sam, Top Hat? Why did Top Hat make such an impression with our fans around the world? What do you think is the cause of that?
That's a good question. I think the Tribe Circus was speaking to a lot of, you know, it allowed the audience to sort of imagine what our world was like when there was just kids, you know, and a kind of, you know, a way to connect on that level is kind of, it's nice. It's kind of free. It's kind of new age. It's groundbreaking in terms of the thinking of, oh, well, what it would be like if I had just a mall to play in and I was a kid and that was it. But obviously the context of the disease and the not surviving, not so great. But I think it allowed people to connect with kind of this another way of life, you know.
Yeah.
And I think with Top Pen in particular, I guess it's he was out there, you know, he was insane. And then kind of, you know, exciting on camera and stuff. But there was, you know, we were challenging some themes in that show that you would guess probably wouldn't make the cut. You know, when he tries to rape Zandra, for example, and Casey luckily comes in and stops him with a good swift kick in the ghoulies. You know, it was kind of, you know, the pyromaniac, the creativity and playing with fire and those sort of themes are kind of exciting and interesting to watch on TV.
I mean, we've got a Facebook question on the, that scene with Zandra, Sam, from Eric Al. Hi, Eric. Thank you for that. Question. Your character had one of the darkest scenes in the series when Top Hat tries to rape Zandra. How did you and Amy, brackets Zan, prepare and having to act through such serious matters while being so young? How was Amy to work with on that?
Hey, look, that's a really great question. There's... I think the context I put this into is very much it's working with the people you're in front of and making sure that everyone's comfortable and you're staging and blocking where you're going, what you're moving, what you're touching very carefully. Because at the end of the day, outside of the character, these are human beings you're working with and you've got to do it in a very affiliative and supportive way, whilst also playing the line, getting the message out of what the character's intent is. And it was very low key. There was definitely no sort of the decision was made definitely not to make it an aggressive kind of forced and violent and suspicion. It was more about suggesting an intent, which means that you can play the line without it having to be kind of like a big and emotional thing on set. And that was, that was kind of how we looked at it. And of course, working with her, she was amazing. She was very conscientious. She knew what she had to do. We were there to do the job. You know, it was very much a, how do we do it in a way that's not too unsettling for the audience, but applies the right intention behind it.
Yes, yes. No, I mean, we always tried to, and I mean, I remember with Caleb and Lex as well. I mean, poor Amy Zandra was also involved with a similar scene with Lex. But we always tried to do that sympathetic. And as you say, Sam, we really tried to come at it in the tribe, you know, to not sanitize the world young people inhabited. You know, we tried to mirror all of those elements, you know, and to keep it as real and as truthful as we can or could. And that's an element. I mean, it's you know, themes of self-reliance, social justice, anarchy, you know, a world without adults and all this kind of stuff. I mean, it's, now I've got one from Amber Anime, I think it is. Hello, Amber. Questions I have are interconnected. If Top Hat could have been the major villain for all season, what do you think his story would have been? We'll freeze that there, come back to that part. Or what would you, if you liked it to be? Again, we'll freeze it there for a minute, Sam. Any redemption chances? Any romances, death or disappearances as his final showing? At any rate, I feel Top Hat could have been as iconic as Zoot, as charismatic as Ram, as manipulative and clever as Mega, and as crazy as the Guardian, all bungled together in an awesome mix of all the major antagonists we've had, if given the chance. I think you were amazing in your role. Thank you for being part of the show. So that's quite a difficult question. I mean, it's obviously the writers and, you know, we would have taken the character, as indeed we will in the books, Sam and the game. But probably you didn't think of it really, but maybe if you had any thoughts, do you think he could have had any redemption chances, any romances, or a death? I mean, if the character had to die, you know, Zoot had quite an amazing death. I mean, any thoughts in that regard?
I think if I looked at the arc of Top Hat, obviously it was inevitable that he may have contracted the virus. or did he? But you know, that's the sort of the context, isn't it, behind the show, isn't it? Is that the virus killed out anyone when they got to a certain age, unless there was like a plot to determine how might one prolong the virus by restricting his breathing or by subjugating himself to chemical kind of stuff that they found, and they found a way to develop that. You know, these are all creative ideations, definitely thinking out loud creatively, not anything that's set in stone, Ray. But no, I think it would have been amazing to sort of have the elusiveness of, you know, did he actually die? And if so, how did he survive? And what did he do to survive? Love interest, oh God, he was violent, he was cruel, he was a rapist, you know, he was someone that would, I don't think that's marriage material. I think Sopat would very much, it would be in the here in the moment. Sandra's right now, move on, next, maybe it's Casey. Oh God, you never know, bless his heart.
and Sam, if you had a phone call to say, would you like to play Top Hat again, would you like to?
I think, I've always been looking for an opportunity to put on the creative shoes again and go for a dance down that lane, and I would absolutely love an opportunity to revisit Top Hat, well, and just not Top Hat, to revisit anything that sort of encourages the creative and gets me out of this sort of the doldrums of working in digital, you know, 50-60 hours a week. And
it's an interesting thing when you know, I often have said so often to, I mean, so many child actors, I remember, you know, that some can go off to, you know, a lot of our tribe cast have gone, they've left it, like Ryan has left the industry, and others have become mothers, but it never leaves you, that creative. It's like a niche that you need to scratch, isn't it? I mean, if you have that in your DNA or genes to create, it never leaves you, does it really?
I agree. I think there's a certain element which is a bit like riding a bike. I think there's a creative muscle there too, which you continually have to work if to be super sharp. Like if you, like any muscle, if it's left, it kind of will atrophy and it kind of won't be the strongest, but the muscle will remember. So it's about one, having an opportunity against that would probably inspire a whole chain of activities that would help me get back into that creative spirit. I think that quick thinking alert and that internal awareness is really important to kind of develop and maintain as a creative or as an artist as such, and that's something I'd probably explore doing to get back into it. And saying that, a friend who was developing a show locally through a local theatre company was like, you'd be great, you come and hang out with us, we do theatre sports and we, you know, we play theatre sport games and we catch up every so often, and then we do small lightweight productions to town and stuff. And that was the first time I was like, oh, theatre sports, that's right. I mean, the thinking behind how sharp you have to be and how creative you have to be at the same time while listening and responding and listening actively to what's going on, I thought, oh, that's a skill that would probably come in handy, you know, and it would also make it a lot, you'd come up to speed probably a lot quicker by doing stuff like that.
That's right. Sam, I got one from, we got some emails sent in with some questions. There's one from Susan Gilmore. Good morning, Susan. Thank you for your question. Who is your favorite actor, and what kind of music are you into? So, do you have a favorite actor?
Oh dear, yes. I mean, I love Ian McKellen and Anthony Hopkins. You know, when you look at the powerhouse academics, the method actors that are out there, but I think there's also some hugely underrated ones out there. To Susan, that's a great question. I mean, I've always enjoyed Robert Downey Jr. and because of his sort of electric persona on television. And you know, I'm also a fan of the not so great actors that are just great because they're such amazing individuals. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger, for example, he's fantastic. I mean, he's done achieved so much, but I wouldn't say he's the from an acting point of view the best actor in the world. But man, what an amazing individual!
Yes, no, it's interesting, isn't it? Really, because in acting, like you know, you go back to some of the giants of the silver screen. I mean, going back in time, people like John Wayne, who essentially played himself in many ways, but and Arnold Schwarzenegger, but that kind of charisma, very charismatic, compared to the kind of, as you say, the Anthony Hopkins, Ian McKellen, actors, you know, and you know, who can turn their hand to most roles. But so there's different methods, different ways to come at it. And Sam, what about music? You into music? You like what kind of music to listen to?
Oh, music's also a big thing for me. I'm very close to my heart. I used to play drums in Irish bands many moons ago when I was sort of dabbling between work and acting and stuff. I also played drums for a couple of Irish bands in the Wellington scene, and that was a lot of fun. And I think a lot of my inspiration came from one of my close friends, Brad. He always used to pull out some vinyl and play and goes, "Hey, have you heard of Billy Cobham?" And I'd be like, "Oh, who's Billy Cobham?" And he'd whack down this record and we'd be listening to albums from him, and my mind would be blown away with this wall of sound, this incredibly incompetent drumming. But I've got broad sense of musical taste. I mean, I love I love jazz and R&B, love hip hop, especially love funk and fusion. It's kind of like the time of day, really. If I'm on the way to work, typically I'll be listening to an audio book, but I'll finish it off with maybe some Audio Slave. I also like the commercial greats, you know, Coldplay and such, but it's kind of like a piecemeal thing. If I really want to listen and have a sit of a moment, I'll probably go back to something that's a bit more jazzy or funky. Herbie Hancock's a big winner for me.
Okay, yeah. So, and of course your dad, who's a very accomplished musician, so you've grown up with music around you. I know Keir was a good guitarist, your brother. We had a Cloud Nine band and used to come and jam. Even I'd hit the skins myself, Sam, you know. And Sam, do you have any other hobbies? You're quite busy with hobbies. I mean, with your riding and horses. And I mean, do you garden? Do you cook? Do you enjoy cooking?
I do. I love cooking. I'm not very good at it. I know how to boil stuff and bake stuff, but I wouldn't say I'm a chef by any example. I think it's just I like to eat really clean and healthy food typically a lot of the time, and it's easy to do that when you're buying lots of greens and stuff, but do enjoy cooking. Hobbies wise, I also am a gamer. I do I got a computer at home and stuff, and I do enjoy catching up with some friends every other week to sort of play some games and stuff for a few hours. That's a lot of fun.
What kind of games do you play?
First person shooters mainly.
Okay.
Kind of, yeah. Warzone, Battlefield, Counter-Strike, Quake, for those classics, probably showing my age a little bit. Quake Live, yeah. Quake Champions, yeah, Half-Life, those sort of things. At the moment, we're really enjoying Warzone Battle Royale.
Well, that's great. And what about Andrea? Does she engage in the games or?
I don't think she understands. It's unusual because all she will hear is me with my headset on having a conversation with myself. And I imagine listening in from a third person's perspective, that might sound insane. So she's not, I think it kind of confuses her. She's like, I don't get it. It's not my thing. So no, she's not really into that.
And so what does she do? What does she do for a living, Sam?
She works for a data analytics company, and she's an actuary. So if you study accounting and you really, really, really love it so much that you want to do more of it and excel, you become an actuary. Or if you get bored of accounting, become an actuary. I think that's what I'm saying. Yes. She's also, you know, a very passionate doggy and pony mum and an amazing wife.
Yes, no, that's terrific. And Sam, once all the borders open regarding travel, is there any place you'd like to travel in the world that you haven't been to?
We've got our hearts on South America at the moment. We'd love to go and explore the East or West Coast, Argentina and South America. I think that's the next one that we want to tick off the list. We've got a good friend who lives in that part of the world who's invited us. It's just a matter of now waiting for the craziness to die down so that we have an opportunity to do so. But yeah, would love to travel more.
Yes. And if you're prevented now from, you know, doing travel, what would you do what's your ideal holiday domestically? Do you like tenting, camping, tramping, canoeing, or anything like that? Any sports, or are you more a hotel man with the room service and this kind of thing?
Yeah, I love the outdoors. If I can spend as much time out in the outdoors in the earth, that would be much more favorable. So Andrew and I are very active. So typically we try and duck away to Waiheke Island, which is this beautiful island an hour out in the Hauraki Gulf in Auckland. And it's got beautiful vineyards all over it and some amazing treks you can do around the coast. So if it involves maybe a bit of wine and a long walk, I'm keen.
Join me on that. Yeah, you probably are aware that I have a vineyard in Martinborough, Sam. So the doors are always open there. And I mean, it's interesting in life. I with our industry, you know, Hollywood and film, television, music, it's nice to have a counterbalance, you know, where you can get in tune, I think, with Mother Nature and slow down to the speed of life. And, you know, wine is just such a wonderful growing grapes. There's something so therapeutic. I love it. I mean, and to drink it. So you're quite a wine lover as well, are you?
Oh, absolutely. We purchased, when we renovated our wonderful home in the North Shore, we bought a wine fridge because as we traveled to different vineyards, we'd collect certain bottles which were recommended for bottling and for keeping, and you'd come across one or two of them that were quite special that weren't necessarily the most cost-effective way of doing it, but they were special enough and recommended by the winemakers enough that we thought, you know, it would be a good opportunity to keep it and see. And some of these bottles that we have now, there's, you know, you can't buy them anymore, and that's quite special. You have a tremendous year, an expression of a grape and a flavor that's very rare and very unique and therefore particularly special. There's something kind of cool about that we like. So yeah, we both loved wine. We don't drink very often. We're quite active and we work so hard, and at the airline we have kind of like a no drinking dry policy, so you don't really get caught up in the drinking culture that New Zealand's quite famous for. But we do enjoy romanticizing about a trip out to Waiheke, spending time in a vineyard, enjoying and tasting different wines, and then going on a bit of a trek. It's a really wonderful way to spend a weekend.
And Sam, you were mentioning you've just renovated your home and you're selling it. Is it tomorrow? It's on the market. It's an auction.
Oh my God! Yeah, it's so stressful. If you're interested in the housing market, it's all fun and games until you have to sell the bloody thing. Excuse my French. You have to. It's quite stressful. This is the first time I've ever been involved in selling a property and buying a new property and getting the house ready. You know, staying with Dad, moving all your stuff out of the way, getting it tidy, sweeping, getting rid of the dog, getting everything tidy so it looks professional. And then, of course, random people walking through your home and getting a text message from someone saying, "Oh, I saw your wedding photos in the bedroom. Wasn't that amazing?" I was like, "Oh, okay, yeah. Are you going to buy it?" "No, it's just cute." "Well, okay, thanks." But so it's been quite amazing and a lot of learning. But
it's going to auction, is it? It's an auction tomorrow.
Yes, auction tomorrow. Wow. Nerve-wrackingly so. So it will sell, but how much it will sell for is the rub.
That's
not looking to buy a house on the North Shore, Ray, are you? I've got one.
I can empathize. I mean, buying and selling homes, and a lot of our listeners will possibly be going through similar things. And I mean, it's a shame for young people. Some just can't get on the housing market. The prices, particularly in the UK, are going through the roof, you know. But have you bought another house, Sam? Have you got a place?
We did. We bought a lifestyle property further out of the city in the country, and we want to, look after horses, get a couple of dogs and a few other animals and stuff. And if it's a 10-acre section with a house that was built in the last 4 years. So, yeah, that's that we've bought that and now selling our place. And, yeah.
Well, that's
upgrading our lifestyle.
Good luck with that. I'm sure it will all go well. That's exciting times. And Sam, you sound like you're in a really good space in your life. And I mean, and with all this COVID, I mean, we had a lot of letters from a lot of our tribal brothers and sisters who were very distressed and anxious and frightened and worried about what might happen. And I mean, do you meditate? I mean, how do you keep yourself? You sound very calm and quite rational. Are you an anxious person or not really, or are you quite laid back?
I used to be a great question, Ray, that I started my meditation practice about 10 years ago, and I don't talk about this party, actually. It's not something I advertise or talk about. But yeah, no, I think there's exercise and sleep and good food, good eating and stuff. And meditation is like the way of the future in my mind. It's definitely a great tool to build more awareness about how you think and how you view the world and stuff. And without that, I would certainly have been a lot more anxious and misaligned, too judgmental, too clinging to ideas that necessarily didn't offer me any value or support me in any other way. You know, critical thinking aside, it's always good to have a few tools when you have a particularly stressful day, because you know the world is a tough place, man. It's not an easy place to hang out in. Everything's trying to kill you at some point along the line, you know, whether it be cold weather or a car, you know, there's a lot of chaos and stuff going on.
It's an interesting dichotomy. I mean, we again explored it in the tribe with Ram and the technos, and I mean, I embrace technology. I think it's terrific, and it's a you know, it's there's so much good with the internet, but equally with so much instant information at your fingertips, it's positive and negative, yin and yang, and it can fuel anxieties and speculation as much as when you're researching, you can Google and get information. But that's the thing. I think too much of it can fuel a lot of anxious insecurities and worries, and so probably everything in moderation isn't really to not get too caught up in all that. And
absolutely, yeah. I couldn't agree more with you. I think technology is fantastic. I think it's I deliver massive capabilities, massive our infrastructure, technology capabilities to organizations and their services that hang off them. And I see day to day how powerful they are. I mean, you look at an airline, for example, and what the logistical or technological effort is to send these birds into the sky. It's phenomenal. And we do it very, very well. But you're right, their access to information that's constantly available, scrolling on your phone, feeding the mind all the time. It makes the mind a very busy crazy place, and if you cling on to that stuff, it's not, you know, really true. It can kind of alter your perception on stuff and not necessarily give you a true sense of what the world is actually about. So yeah, I completely relate to what you said.
And especially with COVID, with all the speculations, I mean, initially we had all the fans were thinking, oh my goodness, it's prophetic. I mean, the tribe is becoming reality, you know, and it just shows what, you know, all of the, you know, we take so much for granted, don't we really? And predict that normality, everything is great, freedom, movement, suddenly the pandemic comes and it's almost, we're in some ways back to the dark ages where we're confined to our homes and countries and not able to travel. And it's almost like, you know, I in Australia look out and there's no, up until a couple of months ago, no planes flying, nothing, you know, and amazing. And
did you guys also feel that yourself and your family also feel that it, and during lockdown, that having a really quiet neighborhood was actually quite special?
It was just totally, again, yin and yang, you know, that there were some elements that were really quite beautiful. I mean, I was on a cruise. We have a holiday home in Australia, and I came out here for, initially I thought it would be just a couple of weeks, and we've ended up, we've been here over a year now, you know, and you know, there's a bubble now, obviously, for the listeners in the Northern Hemisphere, that people are able to travel between Australia and New Zealand without having to get locked down or going in quarantine in the hotels. But hitherto, I mean, you know, so we decided just to stay put. And it is, as you say, I mean, it's a whole different routine, you know, where we could only go out to exercise. And I mean, fortunately, I'm able to work at home and write. And that's why we've been very busy with the Tribe Audio books, which, of course, are read by the cast with music and effects. It's been a lot of work. Incidentally, for those of you interested, the Tribe Revolution will be on pre-release, we hope, sometime in June. So keep an eye out for that. And also look out for future ones if I can bandage Jay to do some more books where, again, without spoilers, Sam Top Hat might make an appearance again. And Sam, did you know the hour has passed by so quickly? So I was just wondering if there's anything in closing you might want to say to any of the fans.
I thank you guys, all the fans and all the support I've had. I still get, even today, last week, in fact, people adding me on Facebook and saying, hey, Top Hat, hey, what was it like? And asking me questions. And that's great. I always have time to answer those questions, to support those fans. And thank you so much for watching the show and supporting Top Hat. And you never know if there's an opportunity for Top Hat to come back.
Yeah, well, we
never know.
You never know. So Sam, on behalf of our tribal brothers and sisters, I know they'd want me to thank you for taking the time. It's been a real pleasure catching up, and I've really enjoyed that opportunity to have a chat. And it's like a family. I mean, we pick up. You can not be in touch for a year or two, then you suddenly. Yeah, it's like yesterday it all happened. But it's quite amazing all these years later, and thanks to everybody in Tribe World for all the support and loyalty. I think I've always found it very humbling, Sam, as I know you have, as the cast. It's just quite extraordinary. It's a special thing, really, and that means a lot to us. So Sam, I would love to work with you again in a heartbeat, and also your dad. And as with some of our other members of cast, I'm very proud and it's been a joy to catch up again. And I look forward to the next time. So from Sam and I, Tribe World, you take care. Lots of love from us all, and look after yourselves. And until the next time, it's a goodbye for me in Australia, and over to you, Sam.
And goodbye for me all the way in New Zealand. Thanks for all your support, guys.
Well, thanks very much. We'll be in touch. All the best. Lots of love. Bye-bye.